Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You know, the community of Cleveland is, it's small, but the interests are to be part of the growth of the city, and I think Jonathan and I are lucky enough to be in this kind of Rust Belt revival that really started, I don't know, in the past 10 years, and it's just growing and growing. And someday I'm excited to tell my grandkids that, you know, we were a part of that. You know, small as the part we were, but we were a part of it.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kamen with HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You're listening to a special radio program about dining in Cleveland, Ohio. I grew up in Shaker Heights, a suburb on the east side of Cleveland. Recently, I had the opportunity to go back and visit the West Side, an area that has come into focus as one of the most exciting food areas to pop up in the last decade. The most exciting new chef to come out of Cleveland is Jonathan Sawyer. He and his wife, Amelia, have opened Farm to Table Haven, the Greenhouse Tavern, in downtown Cleveland, and Asian-focused Noodle Cat in the Gateway District. My dinner at the Greenhouse Tavern left me dizzy with the array of flavors and locally sourced ingredients I tasted. Chef Sawyer's cooking is a study in contrast. His ability to elevate pedestrian ingredients is on full display in his tasting menu. I never knew how delicious Lake Erie smelts could be until I tasted them crispy fried with capers, lemons, and parsley. A single farm egg is converted into a paper-thin crepe-like omelet, the Eraalaya cheese lending some well-received funk as the fluffy egg dissolved on my tongue. I could tell you more about the spring nettle pasta or the clams swimming in a broth of foie gras, but I have to mention my dessert, a popcorn pot de creme fortuitously conceived by pastry chef Matt Danko, a nominee for a James Beard Award and the People's Best New Pastry Chef from Food & Wine magazine.
Hi, I'm Matt Danko, and I'm the pastry chef at the Greenhouse Tavern in Cleveland, Ohio. And what can I say about my desserts? I'd like to think that we were like really pushing for something exciting in Cleveland and for the Midwest, and I think we try to make it fun with, like, our popcorn pot au creme is really exciting for us. And then, you know, maybe a little bit fancier here and there with stuff like our chocolate and tea desserts and apples raised in beet juice and things like that. So
I asked Matt what inspired him to create the popcorn pot de creme, a super creamy custard that invokes the buttery saltiness of popcorn topped with a layer of rich caramel.
A 50-pound bag of popcorn that's sitting in the restaurant for just way too long. We didn't know what to do with it. And one day we decided to make custard. Honest to God. Truth. You can ask Brian Goodman, our executive chef. It just hit us like an apple over the head one day.
The next day I went to Noodle Cat to meet Jonathan Sawyer. When I walked in, he was hosting Noodle Kids, an event in which kids are allowed to choose from a wide variety of fresh ingredients to add to their bowls of ramen. I could not resist tasting a few of the different varieties of steamed buns and an okonomiyaki, a greaseless scallion pancake topped with house-made pickles and wisps of bonito. Chef Sawyer sat down with me to talk about his restaurants and why he's chosen to make Cleveland the home of his family and his enterprises.
About to start Noodle Kids, one of my favorite events we do, where we let kids build their own noodle bowls, and the only rule is you have to put two vegetables in. So it's a build-your-own ramen, but it's encouraging, you know, positive vegetable education. So even if they don't know it, they're getting some sort of education from me, and I work it personally every time.
Chef Sawyer and his wife, Amelia, have made a commitment to sustainability and green practices that are reflected throughout the choices he makes with his ingredients and the materials he's used to build his restaurants.
We just do what we think is right. And, you know, having kids and growing up with, you know, Charlie Palmer and Mike Simon as mentors, I really valued, you know, the cost of ingredients and the proximity of them. And when my wife Amelia and I had kids, we just took the next natural step, which was sustainability throughout the entirety of the business. And even if it is only one address, you know, for one restaurant in one city, we're going to do, you know, the darndest we can to make it the most green restaurant that we could.
Chef Sawyer and Amelia both grew up in Cleveland, but had separately moved away after high school. After living in Miami and New York, Amelia and him decided to return to their roots to start a family and a business.
We just thought it was a pretty natural progression to come home. You know what I mean? We always viewed Cleveland as our home, whether we lived here or not. And it was probably about a decade right after I turned 18 where I wasn't home that much. And you know, it just seemed natural. We wanted to be a part of this, you know, urban renewal of Cleveland and, you know, be able to tell our kids that we're a part of the turning tide.
I asked Chef to describe his relationships with the farmers he sources from and the type of cuts he uses for his meats.
What we like to do is make the job easy for the farmer, so we're not the guys that are like, you know, we just want your pork tenderloins, or we just want two heads of only flowering broccoli. You know, we order all of our vegetables in farm crates. We order almost all of our animals in whole cuts. The two cuts that we do buy are pig's heads and beef strip loins. Those are the only two cuts of meat that we actually buy. So everything else comes in whole or subprimal. So, in the beginning, it made it easier for us to work with the farmers that we enjoyed. You know, some of my favorite farms are Rittman Orchards, Thaxton's Garlic, 14 different varietals traced back to country of origin, DJ's for our pork and our beef, Red Basket for all of our vegetables, including artichokes, and the list goes on and on.
Farm-to-table restaurants seem to be cropping up everywhere in New York, but Chef Sawyer explained to me how the process of being directly involved with his purveyors has been easier for him to manage in Cleveland, as opposed to other more expensive urban cities.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was easier for us to sort of build the restaurant of our dreams as well as source the ingredients of our dreams here as opposed to New York, you know. Not that there isn't already, you know, tons of opportunity for restaurants and for farmers in New York, but, you know, we were starting new relationships with farmers. So, you know, rather than paying $17 a pound for Minutina from Satter Farms on Long Island, which is totally justified. You know, I talked to Floyd or I talked to Farmer Lee Jones, and we're getting the exact same product, advantageous for them, at $5 a pound just down the street from ourselves. So we're also allowed to, you know, offer our customers a value, you know, and I think that is where the big difference for us was. We could do a lot of people and show a lot of people our message and our image much more affordably.
Chef Sawyer told me that him and Amelia were planning on opening one more restaurant based on the food of Trentino, Italy, where Amelia's family comes from. He is cautious about oversaturating the city with his dining enterprises and insisted this would be his final restaurant in Cleveland.
We don't want to oversaturate the market. You know, too much Jonathan Sawyer is too much Jonathan Sawyer, you know?
I beg to differ. When it comes to eating his food, Clevelanders and lucky visitors like myself just can't get enough of Chef Sawyer's food. Stuffed on tempura perch steam buns and sukumono pickles, I headed to the West Side Market, an historic landmark with origins dating back to 1840. The West Side Market began as an open-air farmer's market and is Cleveland's oldest publicly owned market. Today, it is a bustling arcade with over 100 vendors selling everything from soup to nuts. Its vendors largely represent Cleveland's ethnic heritage. This is the place to get smoked meats and homemade pierogies. You can also find fresh seafood, good coffee, an array of hot sauces and condiments, and locally made cheeses. The diversity of products is stunning, and many of the vendors own stalls that have been in their families for decades.
Hello, my name is Regina Trainer. I own a nut stand. I've been in business at the nut stand at the West Side Market for 17 years, but I've been in the market for 33 years.
Hi, I'm Jeremiah Winsick. My mom's family's been in the market pretty much since it opened, the Stump family. They specialized in smoked meats and sausages, and I've had my own stand for about 14 years now, and I specialize in fresh beef, and I also have a fresh poultry stand.
Hi, my name's Diane Dever, and I'm the owner of Irene Devers down at the West Side Market in Cleveland, Ohio. Our stand consists of homemade pierogies, and we have the Ukrainian ladies make them, so it's like your mother in the kitchen. We also have a farm fresh eggs. The farmer came in this morning. We have duck, quail, and turkey eggs. We also have a bunch of local vendors that make my maple syrup. My maple syrup just came in fresh yesterday, and we got 280 gallons of it. We also have a gentleman that produces honey for us. So we have Ohio honey, and we also put our labels on it. I also grind our peanut butter, our almond butter, and our cashew butter. So there's a lot of hands-on work that we do here. Even though we're open 4 days a week, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scene.
Hi, I'm Naren Carterberg, and that's my marriage name. I've been at the market 18 years, and when I first started here, I sell a very small of hot sauce and stuff like that, and mainly it's all Asians. Now I have everything.
Hi, my name is Tony Pinzoni. I've been working in the Westside Market since I was 13, so I've been working here 43 years, and the name of my business is Pinzoni Meats.
Thirsty from olives and cheese I sampled at the market, I headed to the Great Lakes Brewery, the first microbrewery in Cleveland. Bartender David Romano walked me through the menu and shared with me the legacy behind several of their beers' names.
All of our beers are named after something that has to do with Cleveland. I'd say about 90-95% we try to keep it as Cleveland as possible. The Red Right 88 is the infamous play in Cleveland Browns history where we lost the AFC Championship to the Oakland Raiders on a play that was supposed to be thrown out of bounds. Elliot Ness is another Cleveland beer. He was running for mayor of Cleveland and had a political position here. Edmund Fitzgerald was the ship that sank with many Ohio passengers on board. Commodore Perry is another one of our family of five beers, which was named after Commodore Oliver Hazard Perry, who was in the war, the battle of... What was the war? Battle of Lake Erie.
Turns out history and beer go really well together. The Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar, however, was a lesson in culinary science. I mastered the art of the bloody as I experimented with the various mixes, sauces, spices, meats, and cheese-stuffed olives the brewery offers every weekend afternoon. Eager to taste more of the food that represented Cleveland's Eastern European heritage, I was excited to eat at Sokolowski's University Inn for dinner that evening. Sokolowski's is like no place I'd ever been before. The food is served cafeteria style. As you wait in line, you'll notice historic photographs of Cleveland sports heroes, Polish tchotchkes, and taped up pieces of paper listing the handwritten specials of the evening. It's like entering a time warp that transports you back to the 1940s and 50s, when polka was having its heyday in Cleveland. Yes, there are polka CDs for sale tempting you in line as you wait to choose your dinner. Overwhelmed by the amount of entree choices, I asked advice from a Sokolowski regular standing next to me in line.
I like the pork chops, the schnitzel, the paprikash.
The chicken paprikash, if you want ethnic, that's very good.
What's
in that? It's chicken, and then they have it's over small dumplings, and then it's got the gravy with, what's in the gravy?
Well, I think it's a chicken gravy, and it's...
Yeah, but it also has the, what's the, paprika on it?
You gotta have paprika.
Indeed. The choices were plenty, the portions enormous, and the pierogies were fantastic. Just crispy enough on the outside, unapologetically buttery, and stuffed with a creamy potato and cheese filling. I savored them knowing I had been to the motherland and I would never taste a finer version. In addition to having great food, Sokolowski's also has a live piano player on hand named Tom Balog, cranking out old standards like Mr. Saturday Night. On a quick break from playing, Tom shared his take on Cleveland's ethnic heritage with me.
Well, this is probably one of the last ethnic restaurants in Cleveland. Cleveland used to be very ethnic. Unfortunately, that's starting to change. But Sokolowski's is the last great ethnic restaurant in Cleveland.
Despite being part of the old guard of Cleveland restaurants, Sokolowski's is no culinary slacker. They've been featured on Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations, and their pierogies were Michael Simon's pick on the Food Network's Best Thing I Ever Ate. Owner Michael Sokolowski sat down with me to talk about how his family's business originated as a restaurant to feed iron workers in the mid-19th century.
Okay, my name's Mike Sokolowski. I'm co-owner of the Sokolowski's University Inn. We are celebrating our 90th year in business this year. We are Cleveland's oldest family-owned and operated restaurants. We are in our third generation. My grandparents purchased this in 1923. And it was a candy store and slash saloon, and back then it was Prohibition time. And so my grandmother and grandfather bootlegged, you know. And so when Prohibition ended, actually in the 50s, when my parents were married, we were a saloon up until like 55. And when they were building the Inner Belt, which is out here, this bridge that they're going to take down here next year because of just it being too old. We're building two spans out here, you know, two bridges. But my grandmother on my mother's side said, you know, start going into food and feed these iron workers. And so that's where it snowballed, like in the mid-50s.
Having had my fill of Polish cuisine for the weekend, I had brunch the next day at Soho in Ohio City, which stands for Southern Hospitality. Soho's menu features Southern-style food with a contemporary twist. It was there that I ate some of the best shrimp and grits and fried green tomatoes I'd ever had. Chef and owner Nolan Kunkowski explained his reasoning for choosing Cleveland as a location for his Lowcountry-style restaurant.
We just noticed an obvious lack of good Southern food and Southern restaurants as a whole. There's a few barbecue places, there's some soul food places, but there wasn't somebody really showcasing the wonderful Southern cooking that happens in the Lowcountry and in New Orleans and places like that. So we wanted to, as a business decision, we wanted to bring something that was broadly appealing but also lacking.
Yeah.
And there were flavors that we always loved and food that we felt like we could be passionate about that nobody else was doing in the city. Cleveland has a great food community, but it's also not the most diverse. A lot of, like, the local independent places do a lot of the same stuff. And they all do wonderful food, but it's, like, a lot of gastropubs, a lot of, you know, wine bars. So we wanted to just really bring something fresh and unique. And it was a concept that any time we traveled, you know, to D.C., to Philly, to Chicago, to New York, we were always see these, like, cool, hip, modern Southern places.
Yeah.
And we just felt like it would be a hit in Cleveland. Like, a big part of Southern cooking is the seasons and what's available and what's fresh. And then they pickle and they preserve for the next season, you know, so that you constantly have the foods that you want all year round. And Ohio mirrors that kind of tradition of the South. Our season is just a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
But we grow a lot of the same exact things that are so popular in the South. We have wonderful peaches, wonderful sweet corn, like all those things. And we don't have the length of season like they do down there.
Yeah.
But we just felt like it was an obvious fit. Like,
yeah,
so much of what we wanted to do was already being grown here. And then we're so close to Kentucky and the bourbons and the whiskeys and that kind of stuff. So we wanted to draw from all the different places that...
I couldn't leave Cleveland without stopping by Happy Dog. The space is an unpretentious dive bar that seemed to be trapped in the 90s, complete with pinball machines and a Dinosaur Jr. poster on the wall. The only dishes on the menu are hot dogs and vegan sausages. The toppings, however, seem infinite. Once you decide on your protein source, dog or not dog, you then must choose from a sushi-style list of 100 condiments to dress your wiener. The toppings range from classic, house-made ketchup, to totally bizarre, Fruit Loops, and everything in between. I went with house-made fermented Yingling sauerkraut, black truffle mustard, and chipotle ketchup. I couldn't have a hot dog without a local beer, so the bartender recommended a peanut butter cup coffee porter on tap, made from the nearby Willoughby Brewing Company. Comparable to an alcoholic liquid Reese's without the excess sweetness, I was in Happy Dog heaven. If I go back, I might be more adventurous and order Chef Michael Simon's favorite, a hot dog topped with peanut butter and sriracha. Or maybe I'll just stick with my beer. Speaking of Chef Simon, no trip to Cleveland is complete without visiting his restaurant Lolita or Lola, or both. For my final meal in Cleveland, I had the pleasure of eating at Lolita, where I was able to finally taste the straightforward and elegant cuisine that put Chef Simon on the map and turned Cleveland from a sleepy industrial town to a destination restaurant city. The meal began with a tasting of meats, smoked, cured, and seasoned in every way imaginable. Lucky for me, my friend braved the ghost pepper copa that I was far too cautious to taste. I was not ready for my taste buds to be blown during the first course. Chef Simon has a knack for highlighting seasonal ingredients without exploiting them, and course after course, we tasted the thoughtfulness and the finesse that went into the composition of the plates. There was perfectly seared halibut with morels, risotto primavera with Meyer lemon, and gnocchi with chicken meatballs and ramps. Nothing we ate was overly complicated or polarizing for its longtime clientele, nor was it less than perfectly cooked and elegantly plated. I was impressed. Chef Simon had not reinvented the wheel, but he had certainly dressed it up and made it taste a lot better. I couldn't help but gush a little to Chef Simon, thanking him for all he's done for a city that almost hit rock bottom and somehow found the strength to rebuild. When I left in the late 90s, it was depressing. So many restaurants and businesses had gone out of business. Shops were empty, many blocks had been abandoned. Going back and seeing for myself the renaissance that had occurred downtown was a deeply nourishing experience in itself. This time, I tasted the new Cleveland. Layered, focused, unpretentious in that it had never for a moment forgotten its roots. It was, in a word, delicious. I'm Sarah Kamen with HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This piece was produced by Sari Kamen and Jack Inslee for HeritageRadioNetwork.org. In order of appearance, the songs featured in this piece are Born Day by Tax Star, Cobblestones by Jamie Ciro, Ancestors by Peels, Sweet Talk by Pamela Royale, The Old Photographer by Ball of Flame Shoot Fire, and once again, Born Day by Tax Star. Thank you for listening to this program. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. For all of our programming and more information on how to become a member, visit our website. Connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more.